Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Rebecca Scott is a South Dakota businesswoman whose designs have shattered the boundary of the state to make a national mark in retail outlets and online. She joins us today to talk about women in business, building a brand, and the early wonders of 4-H. Rebecca Scott, welcome to In the Moment.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
How are you today?
Good. It's a little crazy in our background. We live on a farm, so you're going to hear a dog barking and about seven different little ones running around. So I always want to let you know that first.
All right. It's just South Dakota audio in the background. There's a postcard from where you're at. We're totally fine with it. Let's talk. I think we should start with this story of you starting your business and sort of not having enough fabric to begin. And then we'll dig into the business a little bit more deeply. But you start at the sewing table and you're looking around and you really don't have enough fabric to make your first designs. Tell me about that day.
Well, I bought most of my fabric from just remnant bins and started making the purses, but eventually I sold all my product, but I still didn't have enough to buy more fabric to sew them. So I started pacing, because I do my best thinking when I was pacing, and I thought, well, I do have really cute curtains. So I stood up on a stool, cut my curtains down, and cut those into purses, and then just kept it flowing from there. And so those sold, and then I had a little more cash flow and learned to reserve a little bit more and all of that. So
So The Sound of Music and Gone with the Wind and Rebecca Scott Designs. All with a history of curtain ingenuity there. Tell me about the company as it is today.
Well, it's huge, I would like to say, in my humble way here in South Dakota, but I employ about 20 different South Dakota women, and I guess one of them is Minnesota. I live really close to the tri-state border, Iowa, Minnesota, and South Dakota, and about four of them are full-time, and the rest are part-time staff between shipping and seamstresses and marketing and accountants and an executive assistant and all of those, so that's where my business is to date, and it's super exciting. I'm finally, in the last couple of years, just doing the original designs, and then I still do all the serging because it's just like my super skill. I just super love serging, and that's just a part of the process. So I still get to do that part, and then I still do all the designing and deciding what gets put into stock and what goes to the stores each week, which is also one of my gifts. But what I'm getting at is I don't have to do all the production anymore by myself, right. So that feels good.
So you started in 2003, and tell me how you ended up growing from that beginning where it's just you at the sewing table to where you are today with 20 employees.
Well, I just super hyper-focused on two things when I started, and that was quality and customer service. And I must have picked the right ones because with each customer, I got really personal. I found out I kind of more or less took tracking notes on them, like what was their last purse order, and then what was the fabric that they liked, and what is their lifestyle now? They have two babes versus one babe. So I developed all these customer relationships, and people picked up on it, and so then they would say, you've got to get one of her purses because they're high quality, which is the other one I picked. They'll last forever, and you'll never use another one. And then, oh my gosh, and she'll remember everything about you, so she'll help you and explain which bag you need, not just the bag that you want, but the bag that you'll need. And so the customers loved it, and it went to their sisters, and then it went to their moms, and then it went to their friends. And so I just created a lot of super fans, so to say, around the brand.
So were you having actual conversations with those customers? You were talking to them in person?
Yeah.
You were looking at the analytics, or you were emailing? Like, how were you getting, mining that data?
So this is before analytics, before I could do all of that. This was just hard knocks reading order forms over and over. Like when I would write the order at an art show or a trunk show in someone's home, I would write notes after the customer was gone about their lifestyle, what they told me. They have a baby on the way, and so I'd write a sweet note when I would send the order, and then I would remember it when I pulled up their old orders by their last name, what was going on, so that I could truly serve them, not just sell them, but serve them.
How did you get started with sewing and designing, versus sewing is one thing, but designing is something else.
Right. I was a good 4-H'er. I started sewing when I was four next to my mom. My mom is a master seamstress and makes beautiful creations still. She's my number one employee. But I would sit next to her, and she didn't think I should be on a sewing machine that young. So I would take a stapler and then just staple Kleenexes together until she was pretending it was machines, so she thought, okay, you really do want to sew. So then she taught me to sew, and I kept doing it throughout 4-H and stuff, and I really liked 4-H because it judged how well your work was done. And then I started getting into sketching my own stuff. I didn't like following the patterns because it was never exactly what I wanted. And, oh, goodness, I'm a self-taught designer, so I had to do loads of prototypes before I figured out different methods. And my mom knew quite a bit from her education, so she taught me how to make patterns and that sort of thing. And so that's how, and then I really liked design because I didn't have to follow someone else's instructions. I could follow my own. Even if it meant 10 mistakes, I still knew that it was my own. So I really liked the designing as well as the sewing.
Let's go back to 4-H and that the whole concept of being judged. How old are you when you're participating in 4-H?
9. You can start at 7 in Clover Buds, but the real 4-H member is at 9, so about third grade.
So what town do you grow up in?
Phillips, South Dakota.
Phillips, South Dakota, 4-H program. And then how does this whole 4-H process work? Because I don't have any experience with that. You create something,
sure.
You send it to a competition where?
Right. So you're in a club, and then you participate in your county. And so it's Hocken County. And then you can go to the next level, like regional level, and then you can go to the state level. And you submit your pieces to judges during their state fairs or their town days, so that county days. And then there's a panel of judges there that decide if you got a red ribbon, a blue ribbon, or purple ribbon, and you want the purple one. And then you can take it to state and have it judged there as well. And then it's throughout the... Well, it's throughout the whole year, but I just really hyper-focused on what's called fashion review and visual arts and baking and all kinds of stuff, but I loved fashion review. And that was you made an outfit for yourself, and then you had to model it in front of judges, and then they got to look at the piece separate to make sure everything was well done, including the backside of the garment, all kinds of things. And I loved the attention to detail and learning how to model and present yourself with confidence and that sort of thing. It was my jam. I loved it.
So before there was a reality TV show, there was 4-H for kids.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and it was high stakes. Like, you showed up to, like, especially state fashion review. I mean, you were up super early because you had to iron your outfit and make sure it was right, and nothing was going to wrinkle while you stood in line to model it in front of the judges and had to make sure all your pieces were together. And, yeah. Sometimes stitching in the last minute, too.
All right, so what are some of the early things that you were making at the ages of 9, 10?
Oh, sure.
Elementary school, yeah.
I made a lot of dresses, and I made a lot of anything I could get my sister to wear. And the stuff that I made her wear, I have a twin sister, was like the stuff that I didn't use a pattern for, like the first prototypes. And bless her heart, she thought they were cool. So I made a lot of that, and I made stocking caps for the playground, those Joker fleece stocking caps that were trending.
Right.
I made those and sold those on the playground while everyone else was playing kickball, and I thought that was really great. And then I started to make boxers because I could figure those out, but my mom didn't think I should sell those on the playground. And I sold a lot of table linens, you know, and some home decor stuff, too.
All right. So when did you start thinking, I mean, obviously an adult could look at a kid like that and say, this kid's going to be a designer, this kid's going to be, a business owner, a salesperson. When did you start making the adjustment to say, I want to do this as a job? Like, did you know right away that it was a viable thing for them?
I knew I always wanted to create, and I knew I liked the business end of things because at fourth grade, I thought if I make it, I could sell it. And so I had that intuition, but I was told very early on, not necessarily by my folks, but just a general, like, the people from high school that advise you, and just in general, when I would say I want to be a designer, they would say, then you're going to have to move to the coastlines because you can't be a designer in the Midwest. But I'm a born and raised ranch kid, and I didn't want to leave the land, so I'm like, I'm not moving to the coastlines. So I put it off, and I decided to do radio and TV broadcasting, and that's my degree, but I was still creating all the time throughout college. And when I get off of radio, I went home and sewed. So I just thought I was going to prove everybody wrong. And so I did it my own ways, but I did it with purses, which I wouldn't have thought I was going to do. But I really liked the purse because it was a quicker creation and something that was like a real pop-in accessory for someone to wear versus trying to figure out people's sizes and things.
Right, yeah.
So that's how the purses were born, so to say. But I did prove everybody wrong.
And when you talk about people who had babies, new moms, you know, you're not looking for a new outfit. Just
right,
one bag.
Amen.
Just
amen.
Give me a kicky bag right now, right?
Yes. So was the handbag route to go. And honestly, in the beginning, too, it was the most affordable. You could buy 2/3 of a yard, and I could make something beautiful and sell it.
So the internet obviously changes everything for you. When you're 9, it doesn't exist in the way that it exists now. How did you sort of, figure that out, figure out places like Etsy, or figure out how to have an online business as well as going to trunk shows and craft shows and hand delivering stuff?
My first model was just trunk shows in people's homes, like Pampered Chef, Mary Kay, Tupperware. I would just go to people's homes, and the girlfriends could design their own bag. So they could pick my style, my design, and then they would pick their fabric. And so then I would sew it up, and it was special to them, which is still 90% of my business is design your own. That's what women love. They got to design it. But eventually people stopped committing. Even today, people my age do not commit to these trunk shows at night. They're just, it's too much labor with all of our kids' activities and everything else. And so then about 6 years ago, I was like, we have got to switch gears. We have to figure out what model we're going to follow because we couldn't get anybody to book shows. And so then I really hyper-focused on my website and put a lot of money into my website. And it's super cool now because it's an illustration of the purse. And then there's 70 different fabric swatches, and you can play around. And when you click on a fabric swatch, it appears on that purse style. Huh. So as soon as I figured out to spend the more money on the website, that was a very good decision because of the e-commerce now. So our website is our main seller, other than, thankfully, because in the Midwest, everybody's super supportive of the art shows in the summer that I travel to. Everybody comes to see me there.
And you're still doing that yourself? You're behind the table often?
Oh, always. It's kind of a thing people don't understand with art shows. The artist or the designer has to be present. You cannot send a sales rep.
I do not know that.
You have to be present. Yeah, because you've got to back up your product, and people want to meet who the creator is. Now, not all shows are like that, but the ones that are juried and very serious art shows, which I appreciate, they do require that. So you'll see me sometimes at there's a show out west we're doing a Spearfish. My twin sister's actually going to do that one. But I call in advance to explain. She's basically me. Is this going to be okay? And they made me send pictures of me sewing the product to prove that they're still handcrafted. And I said, absolutely. I'll show you a little video of my whole studio space and where I'm created and everything. So I appreciate that because then they know they're not made in China.
If you're just tuning in, my guest is Rebecca Scott. She's the owner of Rebecca Scott Designs, and that website is shoprsd.com. And Rebecca, this theme, I'm noticing two themes when I talk to you. One is hyper-focus, and one is this sort of thrill of getting feedback. Let's talk about feedback or being, judged as a word can have a negative connotation. People don't want to be judged, but this is a different kind of judging. Tell me why that kind of feedback is so important to you as a kid and as a business owner now.
I just appreciate feedback because it means I can move that much faster in the direction I want to go rather than hitting a bunch of hiccups. So as soon as I get some feedback about a change in, could you add an extra snap here? Have you thought about an extra handle? I love getting feedback as soon as possible. I didn't always, because I used to avoid it. It's difficult to hear that you may have done it wrong. But I realized the quicker I learned through the mistakes or the mishaps, the faster I could go towards my goal and get better faster. And I always want to be the best that I possibly can be. So I learned to just really embrace feedback. It didn't mean that it was mean-spirited. It just meant that I could do things better.
Was there any kind of leap that you were able to jump over that hurdle and just let go the hesitation of receiving feedback?
Yes, I had to answer the phone. That's how I would say it. I had to start answering the phone from customers and just realizing that they didn't mean it mean-spirited, that they meant they wanted success for me, and they had a couple of suggestions. So once I got over my ego, basically, and decided they really do want to see me succeed, and I want to see me succeed, so this is how I'm going to do it, and I started answering the phone.
Hyper-focus, where does that come from, that sort of digging into something, and what does that mean for you? I mean, in my mind, I'm thinking, you're letting other things, go and sort of focusing on one area. From the context of being a business owner, what does hyper-focus mean to you?
It means, first of all, it has to be something that just comes naturally to you, that you didn't know it didn't come naturally to other people. Like, you can't even explain why you're so driven at whatever it is you're doing. And so sewing and creating just came very naturally to me. It's no problem to sit down and sew for 12 hours and not look at the clock and not realize that 12 hours have passed. So when you have found your, I call it your super skill, when you found something that you can do on hours on end and not realize the clock, that is where you're passionate, and that's where you can hyper-focus because it is a natural skill set. But I wouldn't say it's It should be something that is energizing, not exhausting. So even after that 12-hour day, you should still feel energized because you just love it so much.
You coach other women in business. Is that right?
I do, yeah.
What are women really looking for? What are you hearing? What kind of feedback are they giving you that they need help with to get to the next level?
Most of it, and I talk about this a lot in my podcast, and I just wrote a book about it, it's actually work and family balance. Because I'm running the 20 different staff, and then I have four children and live here in the Midwest, and we farm, their number one question for me always, especially at the art shows, is how do you do it? And so I've just created a ton of systems and methods that work for my home that are very, very teachable to people. So a lot of the coaching that I do is actually maybe 30% business models and how to make money, and 70% managing home life and work life.
Ah, so I need this book. What's it called?
What?
Has the book been released yet, or is it still in pre-release?
Yes, yep. It's available on Amazon.com, and it's also available on my website, which is shoprsd.com. And it's called Equipped to Execute, Guiding Moms to Joyfully Impact Families and Business.
All right, give us a teaser of a tip for the mother who wants to either, you know, she's got a full-time career or wants to start her own business in regards to that balance. What's one of the first things that seems to help people when you
talk
about it?
Okay, this is my secret sauce, and it's super simple. But you need to time everything. I want you to time how long it takes you to get dressed in the morning. I want you to time how long it takes you to make breakfast, time how long it takes you to do lunch. And you only have to do it for about 3 or 4 days before you kind of pick up on patterns. And by timing everything, you don't waste that 10 to 15 or 10 to 20 minutes scrolling Facebook or doing something non-essential because you just simply didn't know how long it would take to fold that load of laundry. So you put it off because you're like, I'll just do it tonight, I don't know how long, and you get stuck scrolling Facebook or doing something that's not productive. So when you time everything, including the cookies and baking and whatever, you're more likely to do it because the first thought is it's too overwhelming because you don't know how long. So start timing everything. You don't have to do it for very long, and then you'll have a pattern of how long things actually take.
So did your mother work as a seamstress when you were a little kid? Did you watch that when you were growing up?
Yeah, not a paid seamstress. She was a stay-at-home mom who taught piano and sewed all the clothes for me, my twin sister, and my older brothers. Okay. And, or, you know, not all the clothes, but did a lot of sewing. And so I picked up on a lot of how to cook, bake, sew, and love on your children from her.
Right. So I have a friend who talks with women a lot about, you know, balancing career and life and kids. And she grew up with a mom who worked outside the home and, you know, was an administrator. And she kind of stands dumbfounded when people say, you know, I'm afraid I don't have enough time with my kids, because she said, well, that's what all moms do. They all work in some ways. Do you think we need to sort of get over as mothers, as women, and now as fathers, as more is expected of fathers in regarding parenting in the last, you know, 20 years and probably ever was before? Do you think we need just to get over this idea that we have to choose between a work and the family and just start making decisions on how to do it better versus which one you're going to do?
My whole book is about that. It doesn't have to be you're a good mother or a good business owner. You can be both. You can't do everything at once, but you can do everything. You just can't do it all at once. But absolutely, we have to just change our whole mindset, is that you can be an awesome business person and an awesome mother and father. You just have to create some systems to make sure that each one is well taken care of.
What's it like working with your mom?
Oh, my gosh, I love it. I love it. She's probably my best friend, but that's hard to say because I have a twin sister who's also my best friend. But we talk probably 2 to 3 times a day, and sometimes it's business and sometimes it's life. But, oh, I don't know what I'd do without her.
All right, what is she still teaching you as an adult and as a grandmother and as a business partner or employee? Like, what are you still learning from her on a weekly basis?
She would say, Rebecca, life is a journey, not a destination. So she reminds me of that frequently when I am so driven that, please, Rebecca, remember the fun and remember the process and remember these years, because these will be fleeting. So she's my anchor.
All right. What's next for you? What are you hoping for as a business owner you know, that you haven't been able to do quite yet?
Well, I wrote the first book, so eventually I'll write the second book. And I hope to build a barn studio on our West Acres on our farm here, where I can house a studio space for college students to come use machines, because it wasn't an option for me to be a designer in the Midwest, but I would like to offer that to to others eventually that it is true. You can be a designer in the Midwest. So I'd like to offer a space for them to kind of explore those ideas. And then also like a retreat center for teaching women about business and motherhood that they can be done simultaneously. And then also hosting all the cool trunk shows for my product.
All right, Rebecca Scott, come back and talk to us again. Maybe we'll have another conversation just focusing on that book.
Oh, I would love it. Thank you so much.